And joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon is Doug Daigle. He is the coordinator for the Louisiana Hypoxia Working Group, but he is also an independent person working with a wide variety of groups, trying to get information out about some interesting conservation issues. And today we'd really like to talk about the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which many people may not know about, although it affects many of us when we go out to parks or national forests. We're seeing the result of that fund. So maybe, Doug, we can start off talking about the fund, the history of it, when it started.
Sure. Thank you, Judith. I like to call it the most important conservation law you've probably never heard of. And it had its beginnings about 1963. The earliest version was proposed by President Kennedy. It was finally passed in 1964 and enacted in 1965. So it goes back to a time when conservation was really growing in the United States. And I was fortunate enough several years ago when living in New Orleans to meet Stuart Udall, who was visiting the city. He had been Secretary of the Interior under Presidents Kennedy and Johnson, and passed away just a couple of years ago, but a very inspiring person. His perspective was just wonderful. And he and the people supporting the fund did all this at a time when it was not a partisan issue. They accomplished so much, especially in the first decade or so. But since then, too, the law has continued to help the American people in a lot of ways. But the Land and Water Conservation Fund is really, I'd say, the premier vehicle for creating parks and recreation areas and also enhancing those.
Around the country.
Around the country, yeah.
And particularly in Louisiana, we're very conscious of that right now. I know in our own city we've just gained momentum to start a new park, although we have quite a number that we'll talk about that have been helped by that fund. So let's talk about places in Louisiana that you're aware of that this fund has helped, places people might not think about and just assume, well, they've always been that way.
Well, it's interesting. The fund has two components. There's a federal component, and that's the one that has helped the National Wildlife Refuges. We have a very impressive network of those in Louisiana, all across the state, from up near the Arkansas state line all the way down to the Gulf, the Breton Islands. And also there's a state component. It's the state assistance grants component. And that's one where the state, along with communities and local partners and constituents, can propose projects and get them funded. And interestingly, that is flexible enough to allow a lot of different areas to get helped. So across the state, many local parks and community recreation areas, including ball fields, have been funded and improved by the Land and Water Conservation Fund. So it's not just National Forest, although it has helped those as well, but it's a wide range of things, going from community ball fields to things like the National Wildlife Refuges.
I think a lot of people might not be aware of that. We think that most parks are funded completely by local sources.
Actually, a lot of them are not, and this is a matching program. So, the state and local partners have matched with the federal component for these local projects. That's a model that's been used in a lot of laws that try to protect areas. The Coastal Restoration Law in Louisiana, CWIPRA, is a federal-state match.
Mm-hmm. Well, can you talk about some of the national parks that you've been to that you're particularly fond of, and perhaps some people here have visited them, perhaps not? We certainly haven't probably visited all these sites in our state.
Well, it's interesting. We have two national parks in Louisiana. A lot of folks know about the Jean Lafitte National Park in and south of New Orleans. There's also the Cane River Creole National Historical Park up near Natchitoches, and that one's pretty new. They were both established in large part through the Land and Water Conservation Fund, working with the local folks who were promoting them and the state agencies, culture and tourism, who were supporting those. So our two national parks in the state were helped. I've mentioned the National Wildlife Refuges, very premier areas, that have been helped by those. the Bayou Teche Refuge that a lot of folks are familiar with, which was established specifically to provide more habitat for the Louisiana black bear. That was one of them. Further north, the Tensaw River Refuge, which was one of the first areas where the black bear habitat really started being protected in the state, was another one.
And how large an area are we talking about to give people a sense of what it covers?
Maybe? Well, they vary, you know, but you know, they're fairly – some in the state, they're large for us. Now, compared to some areas out west, not so large, but yeah.
And so these refugees, I think some people perhaps who are not involved in conservation may not really understand the difference between a refuge and a park. And what are you allowed to do in a refuge? Can people visit them, or is that completely off limits?
Oh, yes. They can visit them. You can do a lot of things. You can bird watch. You can fish. You can hunt in most of them. Within the proper season, you have to get a permit to do that, of course. You can canoe if their area is appropriate for that. Horseback, just depends. You know. And every refuge is a little different, you know, depending on what the landscape is there. Some of them have had events for handicapped hunters that, you know, different communities have put on. The Tensaw Refuge and Bayou Cocodrie have done that. So there's a lot of variety there, but depending on the season of the year, many activities that you can do. They are wildlife refuges, so they're somewhat different than the national parks in that there won't be camping, for instance, in those.
Mm-hmm. Parking lots.
Well, they'll have a parking lot, but you know, it's somewhat more limited in that sense, because in the national parks you'll have campsites and then a national forest as well. The Kasachi National Forest has been helped by the fund. It was established decades before, at least the first districts were. But the Land and Water Conservation Fund has helped to expand and enhance the Kasachi National Forest as well.
And as you're talking about some of these places, the national parks, national forests, the wildlife refuges, people can visit the Land and Water Conservation Fund site, and there are lists of what we have here in Louisiana. Could you give that website so people could actually, if they search for it?
If you Google you'll bring up a lot on the web about it.
I think it's lwcfcoalition.org.
Right.
And so if you visit that site, you'll be able to find out more about some of the places that my guest is talking about. My guest is Doug Daigle, who is involved with a number of groups who are interested in these various areas around the state that are helped by the Land and Water Conservation Fund. In addition to these larger areas that perhaps people throughout the state use, there are local parks as well that you mentioned that we may think are funded completely locally, but many of our neighborhood parks are actually helped by that fund too.
In every city, I know in Lafayette, there are numerous parks. The city park system, starting in the mid-60s, you know, when the law was passed, they immediately began to apply for these grants. And there are places online you can go and see a list of all the projects in Louisiana. It's over 700 since 1965. And so, for instance, in Lafayette, Salzman Park, Willingham Park, Sauchet Park, you know, Graham Brown Memorial Park, Thomas Park, Acadiana Nature Station Park. You
so
go down
a real
the list,
mix of parks, too, that you're talking about, some very small, some larger for different uses that have been helped by this fund. So if people do go to that website, they can see a list of what is available in Louisiana, parks, and again, all the ones that you mentioned. But this is nationwide as well, and they could probably find a site that tells them more about what's been helped nationwide as well.
Mm-hmm. As that and the benefits that come from this, there are obvious environmental benefits, but there are also economic benefits. These places provide a lot of tax revenue. They create jobs. And there's what they call the economic multiplier effect through the outdoor recreation activities that occur. So billions of dollars are generated by these areas. So they serve a good environmental purpose, but they're also very beneficial economically. Quality of life, certainly. But we're finding as well that in planning now for urban areas, setting aside natural parts, especially in terms of the drainage and things like that, you can really help protect infrastructure, take pressure off of your flood control systems, and also have natural areas for people to enjoy through much of the year.
Just recently, we've been working on a comprehensive plan here in Lafayette Parish, and those are some of the concerns that have been addressed by that comprehensive plan and some of the new parks that are being planned as well. So it's on a lot of people's minds how to achieve that in your own community. Now, Doug, I know in addition to helping this coalition of groups who are interested in all of these various parks and national areas, you've been working in conservation for quite a while, very interested. Can you tell us some of the things you've done in the state and been involved with in the state? I know you were here a number of years ago talking about the Gulf.
Right. Well, I've worked for a number of years on the issue of hypoxia in the Gulf, or what's called the dead zone, and coastal situation, of course, with coastal land loss. Generally in the state, you know, there's a lot of conservation activity that goes on having to do with native habitats, and planning is becoming a much bigger part, as you mentioned, especially for the urban areas. Baton Rouge recently completed a comprehensive master plan. Lafayette is doing that, and it's something that, you know, is long overdue in a lot of areas. So all of this can intersect in ways that are beneficial for folks. Certainly in the coastal area, the planning for flood control and hurricane protection can incorporate these natural areas and help support the infrastructure. If the Land and Water Conservation Fund is there, it can be utilized for a lot of this. It's an ongoing struggle every year to try to get it funded. Interestingly, when it was set up in 1965, it was designed to be funded through offshore oil revenues. That was an innovation. It wasn't funded directly through tax dollars. Now we've become more used to that, and it is one of the things that's funded through the Gulf of Mexico Energy Security Act, what people call GOMESA. 37.5% of the offshore royalties that go to the federal treasury from that production in the Gulf go to the Gulf states, but 12.5% is intended to go to the Land and Water Conservation Fund. So it was very innovative when it was set up in that way, using one resource to help another.
Right. And it's interesting that you're talking about the balance of, you know, you've been working with the hypoxia issue and the dead zone in the Gulf, but so many of these other on-land sites have an effect on that as well, don't they?
True.
With the whole drainage going down into the Gulf. And we have a young scientist here at UL Lafayette, Whitney Broussard, who's worked on that issue in the past as well. So interesting balance. There's always everything affects the others. So if people would like to find out more about that issue, is there a site to go to about the hypoxia and the dead zone? And is there a site that they could go to for more information?
If you're interested in the the science of it and the research that's being done, gulfhypoxia.net is run through the Louisiana University's Marine Consortium, which is down in Cocodrie, Louisiana. They do the annual cruise every summer to map the hypoxic zone. We should be getting this week or next the annual prediction for how large it's going to get. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration puts that out every year, working with scientists in Louisiana and some other places. And so that's scheduled to come out soon. I don't think it's predicted to be especially large this year, but that varies year to year.
So an interesting place to go and find out more about that issue, because it is affected by the other places that we're talking about where the drainage of the Mississippi comes through, and certainly these places that are set aside as national parks and national forests and wildlife refuges all help in that issue as well. And also the parks that we have in our communities, as you mentioned, that help with drainage and natural space as well. So it's all a big ecosystem, isn't it? Something I guess conservationists like you have been trying to tell us for so long.
True.
And so you're based in Baton Rouge right now, and you said that they've just finished with a comprehensive plan as well, and that talks about parks and green zones as well?
It talks about protecting watersheds, wetlands, setting aside low areas not to be developed. It's got great language in it. It's not all being done yet. That the public still has to be vigilant to try to make sure the. But having the language is the first step, and it really is a fiscal issue as well as an environmental issue, because we all end up paying for the infrastructure costs. And there's a reason why the drainage culverts keep getting bigger every year. It's not an act of natural act. It's because of the effects of losing the natural drainage system. The forest and fields that permeable surfaces that can hold water and filter it and do all those things.
That's right. Again, such a fine balance. If you are just tuning in, my guest is Doug Daigle. He is working with a group of various organizations in the state who are interested in the Land and Water Conservation Fund, which helps to fund many of our locally created parks here in our community in Lafayette and around the state, as well as some of the wildlife refuges and also national parks and national forests. If you're interested in finding out more about the Land and Water Conservation Fund, they do have a website for the fund here in Louisiana, and you can find out more about that as well. And that is lwcfcoalition.org. And, of course, there are others around the country if you'd like to know more about it. Doug is the coordinator for the Louisiana hypoxia effort here in the state right now and has worked with the issues of the dead zone in the Gulf for many, many years, but in general interested in conservation in Louisiana, as we all are becoming much more aware of it. Well, Doug, anything else we should know about some places we can visit and find out more about what this funds and so we can take advantage of them?
Well, any of the National Wildlife Refuges, of course, and they have excellent websites here in Louisiana. And the refuges are across the whole state, as I mentioned. And we have the National Forest, the Kisatchie National Forest, and the two national parks. And then there are a whole host of other areas. If you go to the Culture and Tourism website, there are historical monuments and things that the fund has helped, many of which are, in effect, parks.
So a real wide network.
Right.
And, you know, I think people find it interesting. Sometimes we confuse national forests, national parks. We kind of merge them all together. But there's an interesting difference, and it's nice to know that they're being funded and helped in the state of Louisiana. So several places you can go to find out more about these sites, the fund, and also the work that Doug has done with hypoxia in the Gulf of Mexico. Well, we appreciate you taking the time to come tell us more about it, Doug, and let us know more about our state and what's happening here, as well as in our community. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.